This morning, I'd like to go back to the very basic question that you're working with. What am I? What is Mo? What is it? Indeed, all the Coens, in all the collections, are simply variations on this one fundamental question. As you know, in the Diamond Sutra, it says, arouse the mind without resting it on anything. And to really question, not as an intellectual conundrum, not as something that you've got to find out, resolve, answer, but a question that will lead you to the very depths of your being. To do this requires, indeed, that you arouse the mind and let go anything that offers itself as a repose, a rest. Looking around at your backs, it is quite evident that most of you are far, far from arousing the mind. Most of you are either in or seeking a peaceful state, a state perhaps away from the pain, a state away from the incessant nattering and nagging of the thoughts, conversations, ideas and opinions that constantly flood the mind. Most of you are simply sitting there, looking into the mirror of your mind, in this state of reflection, which is indeed a restful state. You hope that if you can stay in that long enough, your mind will become blank. Confusing this blank mind with the emptiness of which Zen Buddhism speaks. If you're working on a koan as you should, it will be the hardest work that you've ever done. The problem is that you don't know how to ask the question. You hear the words, what am I? You understand the words, what am and I? And so therefore you think, well, I got the question. That's not difficult. It's the answer that I can't find, it's the response. And failing that, the tendency is to sink back, to wait, to expect something to happen. If you sit long enough, you think, it'll be okay, sooner or later. Something is going to drop from the heavens. You must understand truly, there is no magic whatsoever in sitting in the Zazen posture. No magic at all. People come to me and they say, Zen hasn't done anything for me. I've practiced for 10 years and Zen hasn't done a thing. Of course it hasn't done a thing. What we do here is simply arrange an atmosphere, a situation, in which it is now possible for you to direct your mind in such a way that you can penetrate into the very mystery of being. That's all. The altar, the Buddha, the candles, the flowers, the incense, the cushions, all that are stage props. Ways by which a certain atmosphere is generated in order that you can now apply yourself. But apply yourself is the very essence, it's the very raison d'être of all that. How do you ask this question? This is the question. How can I really ask this question? If you know how to ask the question, you have already responded to the question. There isn't a question over here and an answer over there. There's not the question, what am I here? And the answer, I am this or that, over there. The questioning is it. The questioning is already arousing the mind without resting on anything. And if you do this in a real way, not in order to practice Zen, not in order to come to awakening, not in order to gain something, wisdom or understanding or love or whatever it is that you think that you're going to get if you wave this magic wand of Zen. It is applying the mind. Most of us, when we start really looking into something that is real, a restlessness comes up, and almost an agitation, and we fight it off. This is why it is necessary to sit with a straight back and a low center of gravity, because that will give you the strength, that's all. It will not give you the practice. Is this your question? What am I? Is it real for you? Is it meaning for you? And if it is not, what is your question? If your question is simply, what is my question? At least you're working with something that is yours. We've said many times that you're trying to work with this question from outside. You're trying to see or know or grasp something that you feel will be I am. You want to know it. You feel that the only sensible response to a question, what am I, is knowing the answer. Whether you're going to put it in that bold way, of course, is unlikely. But implicitly, in the very approach that you take to the question, implicit in that is, I must know what I am. Unfortunately, our very education system militates against the ability to ask this question in a real way. Indeed, ever since the 17th century, our society has been building up ways of being in the world which are antipathetic to any real rootedness in the world. No wonder we're trying to get into space. This rocket to the moon somehow epitomizes our whole society, not in its greatness, but in its stupidity. We cannot enter into this question truly from outside. And again, you hear me say this, and it doesn't mean a damn thing. What do I mean by this? You must ask that question at least, not here now. That question should have been asked years ago outside the Zendo. What is the difference, the real difference, between trying to see it from outside and working from within? I've written scores of books on this, and I bet none of you have read them, or at least read them in a way that makes any sense. If you work from inside, you no longer can work with thoughts. You work with, if you like, with a different aspect of the mind. The creative, generative aspect of the mind. It is not that that generative, creative aspect of the mind is it. But certainly working with this mind, this differentiating mind, this discriminating mind, I should say, the mind which sorts things through, which analyzes, which accepts and rejects, which judges and refuses, is useless to get to anything that is fundamental. This is why we're a society without real values. Everybody's got their truth. Your truth is as good as my truth. What you think is good is as good as what I think is good. We've got nothing fundamental. It's all surface stuff. It's surface stuff because we are all surface beings. We're content with this. We're content to appear as though we were practicing Zen. But if one really gets inside, if one really gets that, then one's working with this sense of self. It is no longer a thing. It is no longer a way of thinking about it. It is a sense of self. What is this sense of self? Buddha, in his Four Noble Truths, said life is suffering. I know some people are going to say, here we go again. Here we go again, because that is one of the most profound, possibly the most profound statement that's ever been made, other than perhaps love thy neighbour. Have you ever really pondered on this? Not in terms of, oh yes, I know what it means. I hurt when I get up in the morning. I know what suffering means. Do you know what suffering means? Have you really investigated it? Come to terms with it? The sense of self is the sense of suffering. It is an inner groan. It is this that is our reality. when we are working on ourselves, most of us, we're working with this tremendous sense of inertia. And this sense of inertia is taken for granted. This is real. This is the reality. It's almost as though that is the firm ground on which I stand in order to ask the question, what am I? And it is for this reason that the question becomes abstract and meaningless. But it's interesting that Buddha said, suffering comes from desire. So, underlying that suffering is desire. The suffering is a kind of anxiety, a vulnerability, an insecurity, a fragility. It is a feeling of the very contingency of existence. And it is this that why we grapple so much with the frustration of existence. Because that gives us some kind of bulwark, protection against this vulnerability. It is secure. That we can rely on. But the insecurity, the anxiety, the concern is always to do with our desire. Nisargadatta always stresses that basically suffering is fear and desire. Fear that desire will not be satisfied. It is not that I desire. I am desire. That is my really truly sense of self, is desire. I want. I must have. I will. And this, again, is something for us to investigate, not to learn about, not to add into our notes of useless information. This is a direction in which to look. It may be, it's very possible that this person is making a mistake. Don't accept what I'm saying for heaven's sake. What use is that? But investigate for it for yourself. Is this true? Is this how it is? I remember very clearly when Yasthani first said that the self is an illusion. And my immediate reaction was, no, that is not the case. And it's because one rejects, one objects, one questions, that the whole questioning becomes real. If you just accept what is being said and say, oh, he's put that very well, that's a very good teacher, well, yeah, that's great, and then go on wondering what you're going to have for lunch. No, you must challenge. Not me. It's not that you should come into Doksan and start arguing, but you must, when you're home, when you've got that time to spare. Because this, questioning in that way, is it true that desire is basic, that suffering has underlying it always desire? Is this true? Is asking the question, what am I? That is how you ask the question, am I? You don't sit there with this question somewhere up in ethereal space and just keep on thinking, now I've got the question, that's all that matters, it's up there somewhere floating around, I just have to stay with it. That's no good. No, is it true? Is it true, first of all, that I manifest as a sense? Is there another way in which I manifest other than a sense? There is, but this is beyond the sense of self. But what is that then? What is that which is not the sense of self, out of which the very sense of self emerges? So you question it, you ask yourself, is it the case? Is it true? It's not, does he know what he's talking about? That's another question altogether. Because is it true that desire is the basis of suffering? If we see that, we see it in ourselves. But if you ask, does he know what he's talking about? Again, you start looking outside yourself. You start looking for other people, what other people have said, other things that you've read. Does it correspond? Is it so? And so on. That is not at issue. What is at issue is, what are you? And everything this person says, writes about, or whatever, is always directed, truly directed towards directing you to a way of looking. But as I say, this desire is not I desire. I am desire. That is the sense of self. And when the desire becomes strong, so the sense of self becomes correspondingly enhanced. And it is this enhancement of the sense of self that we feel is being successful in life. Everything that we do, one way or another, is done in order to enhance this system, sense of self. In other words, the fundamental desire is the desire for an intense sense of self. It is a self-generating, self-reflective situation. The desire feeds on the sense of self, and the sense of self feeds on desire. And that is the way that we maintain our sense of being. Because our main desire, you could say, is to exist. And as you know, when you went to the workshop, we investigated what this exist means. As you know, it comes from ex and sisteri, which means to stand outside. In other words, we want to be outside ourselves. And one of the ways which we secure that is by looking outside ourselves. This searching outside ourselves is a way by which we are trying to establish ourselves. It is a whole process which is going on, all circling around the sense of self. We're not saying for one moment that that's all there is. On the contrary, it's only by really getting to see this that we can go beyond it. But it's no good people saying, well, you don't talk enough about love. You don't talk enough about the higher things of existence and so on. You seem to spend all of your time talking about suffering and egoism and sense of self and so on. We have to wade through the muck. It is out of that muck that truth will emerge. As it says in the Vimalakirti Sutra, that the lotus does not grow on the high, dry ground. It grows in the marshes and the mud. And so it is. So now we've got a way to which we can get into this sense of self, into this question. There is a sense. It's not a feeling, but it's not a sensation. It's somewhere between that. It is the feeling of being. And it's the feeling of being which is behind that word I. I feel, I sense this. It is that, and everything we're doing is wanting to preserve that. That is the desire. And because that desire is either being frustrated at the moment or going to be frustrated in the future, that I start getting anxious, or I start getting angry, or if the threat is overpowering, I get depressed. But always there is that sense of self. It's not that, again, I have a sense of self. If you want to know what I am the sense of self. There is nothing outside that in terms of me or I. That is me. And you see, this is the whole world for me. We've said before that this colours my whole experience in life. It's like I wear rose-coloured glasses. Everything is judged in terms of how is that going to enhance or diminish my sense of self, including doing good for others. You know, when I'm a good person, that's a good feeling, a good sense of self. Look at this. See into this. See how it pervades your whole life. Get to know it thoroughly. You see, one of the problems that we've got is we've got an imagination. Many people look upon the imagination as highly desirable, but it's a curse because it gives us all kinds of illusions, background illusions indeed, that make us believe that the world is outside us, that the world is stable, that the world is something. And again, we want this. We want this stage on which we construct. This is it. You see, an animal does not have a stage. The stage, as this person has said, comes from the language we use. Again, don't take it for granted that this is the case. Ask yourself, is the world really a product of the words that I use in order to describe the world? See into this. What is real? Supposing you had no language, this is one way in which you can get into this. What would you see? Do you think you'd see a wall or a tree? How could you? There is no word wall or tree. So you cannot see. In other words, you really now got something else. If you're doing mu, this is a great way into mu. What is it? And you would sit and you would just... This is what I call meditation. You take this idea that the world is the words we use to describe it, and you let it be suspended there, and you allow any understanding to come up. You don't actively go out to try to understand it, because if you do, then you'll start pulling in all that you've read, all that other people have said, all that you've thought about in the past, and all that rubbish, and it will just get lost. The question will get lost in some kind of philosophy. But if you allow the understanding to come to you, then it sort of comes, there is this bit that comes under, something quite alien comes up. There's no integrated structure that comes out of this. But out of it comes a sense of the truth or the meaningfulness of what you're working with. It becomes richer as you do this. And insofar as the idea is now a rich, living idea, one can work with it. It is no longer just a concept among other concepts that you add together in order to make some philosophy or other. So this is working from inside. You're working now with what is coming out of you. And this is another problem, of course, that Rinzai never stops emphasizing. When he says you have no faith, you lack faith in yourselves. And this is it. Your willingness to listen to others, listen to me and accept what I say as being the case without question. Your willingness to go to books, other books, constantly to try to get the truth, to try to get what this other person is saying. This need that we have for education, as it's so called. We feel that we must get it from outside, that anything really worthwhile must come from outside. It must be right because he is whatever and she is whatever. And so it is. I mean, she is a great philosopher and he is a great scientist. And so therefore, they must be right and I must accept what they say. This is lacking faith in yourself. Have nothing to do with what others say as being in any way the truth for you. It is, there's good indicators perhaps, but there are some people that give you good pointers, useful pointers and worthwhile pointers. And there are other people that just dish you up a lot of trash. And the first thing you've got to do is to be able to distinguish between those two. But when you get the one that gives you the pointers, see them as pointers. See them as ways into, not the destination. Have that feeling that whatever comes up inside yourself has intrinsic value because it is yours. I don't mean yours in an egoistic way, but it is you, it is your life that is being manifest right now. And so therefore it has great worth, but now it needs to be refined. And this is what the process is of what the work we're doing. As I say, much of what comes up originally is this sort of mixture of desire and anguish. See into this as being the basis of your life. It is not some accident. It is not something which you can leave on the side and get on with your life. This is your life. But with this imagination, we create a whole world. And we feel that that world is real. And it is real because we can imagine it. And it is that interesting realization, again, something that you can really see into, that I give reality to what I call the world. Not I, Albert Lowe, but that which is surging up and ultimately creates this personality among everything else. That is where the world has no reality. see into this, because this, again, leads directly back into yourself. It's like Hakuin says, what is there outside us? What is there we lack? What is there outside us? Work with that as also as a question. Again, here, for us on a session, you really work with all of the work that you've done outside session. And if you haven't done any real work outside session, any real pondering, any real concern, then of course, when you come to session, the whole result is going to be thin at the best. But if that is your life, questioning, getting to know, getting to realize, this is your life. If you don't do it now, you cannot do it later. There is no later in that way. It is only now that you can do this. And as you get older and the body starts breaking up, it means to say that you're going to lose a great deal of strength in this very ability to ask this question. Don't feel that you've got an infinity to work with, because you haven't. On the contrary, you haven't got very much time left at all. If you believe that tomorrow it will be different, that tomorrow, well, I'll feel differently, I've got more time tomorrow. Perhaps when I retire, I could be able to give my mind to it, forget it. That will be the last opportunity. You know, it's only in the midst of this struggle that goes on, in the midst of the work situation, the family situation, the whole situation, it's that which is you. You are the situation. What is there outside us? And again, we project outside us. For example, this question of death. If you've really looked into this question, what is there outside us? What is death? You think that there is a kind of eternity. No, there's no eternity, for God's sake. That's one of the products of imagination. You know how that comes about. That it's we see time as flowing. Time is ongoing. But in order to really sort of see that, we must have, like a river flowing, it has to have stable banks. And our time flows against the background of eternity. As far as the reason is concerned, that has to be the case. But the banks are flowing as well. Eternity is in time. There is no eternity. So what is death if there is no eternity? It all comes back to now. You always, once you really start looking at anything real, for example, the question, what am I? I'm now. I am what is happening now. That is the answer to the question, what am I? Of course, if you have to see this. Once I've said it, it is no longer true. In fact, anything that is said is no longer true. You have to really enter into that. You have to be it. You have to live it. I am now. You live that. That is life. It's not that this is a new discovery that I'm putting in. It is a revealing what has always been. So let me repeat. Do not just sit musing do not just sit in this kind of blank state waiting for something to happen. On the other hand, don't try to force your way through, because what are you forcing your way through? The very response of the question. You're everything, both the force and that which you're forcing your way through. It's whatever is right now, is it. Now, what is right now? And to do it, to respond to that, you have to keep dropping away all your expectations, all your beliefs, all that you think that you know. You just keep dropping it away. Anything that offers itself, you just let drop away. You don't chase it away, you don't throw it away. You just come back to what is now, what is going on right now. And don't be ready, don't be quick to seize, oh, I've got it, desire, I've got it. No. I'm just pointing. Let it come up to you. Don't you go to it. Let it come up. Allow it. Open. Ready. This. If you do this, I tell you, you're going to be sweating. Because it requires this kind of vigilance not to be swept away. The kind of work that many people do is encouraging themselves to be swept away. No, it's not. That's an emotional, excited kind of practice. No, this one is a steady, patient, intimate readiness, openness to what is.
Four vows.
All beings without number,
I vow to liberate endless blind passions. I vow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to attain all beings without number. I vow to liberate endless blind passions.
I vow
to uproot dharma gates beyond measure.
I vow
to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to attain all beings without number. I vow to liberate endless blind passions. I vow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to attain.